Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here with my friend, good friend, Ronald J. Martin. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good. That's a formal way to say my name.
Well, yeah.
I appreciate that formality.
Well, I'm trying to be erudite, trying to be sophisticated these days.
Well, I appreciate that because as somebody who just graduated from Midwestern, I feel like I demand that.
Yeah, I neglected, I'm going to have to apologize. I should have said Dr.
Thank
Ronald
you.
J. Martin.
Why don't we just pick back up with the whole introduction, start over. I feel much better about that.
Dr. Ronnie Martin, he is the lead pastor of Substance Church, a church that he planted, when was that, 45 years ago? How long ago was that?
Might as well. 10 years ago.
10 years ago, a church that he planted, he's lead pastor. He's also director of Leader Renewal for the Harbor Network. Is that right? Do I have that right?
That's right. You got it.
Director of Leader Renewal. And we're having him on the podcast today because I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk about what I'm calling the inner life of the pastor. I don't know if you saw this, brother, but in the past week, at least the past week from this recording, I saw some statistics about vocational credibility. It turns out that, based on some arbitrary, I guess, evaluation of trustworthiness, clergy have taken a dive. clergy are some of the least trusted, according to this data. It's a very low percentage of people who find clergy trustworthy. And, we can talk about why that might be, but it just, for me, is just another kind of, shot into the vocation that you add to kind of the rates of burnout and all these sorts of things. It's like, well, gosh, I'm plugging away at a job that may be sort of sapping my energy. And now I find out, people think that I'm a piece of junk anyway. And it just prompts me to think, we really need to look into the heart of what's behind pastoral ministry and, are the pastors okay? And as a director of Leader Renewal, I thought you might be somebody who's well-suited to talk about this. Initial thoughts, I've got some specific questions, but just initial thoughts on this idea of trustworthiness and how it may affect even the way we think about the vocation of pastoring.
Yeah, I saw those stats. They're going around. It feels like those stats have been sort of circulating now for a few years, right?
That's right.
Well, I saw
we're
those
circling
stats,
the like, drain, in other words, is what you're saying.
100%. Well, I felt like, didn't we see these stats 5 years ago and now we're seeing them again and maybe they're more extreme than they were? It's hard to say. When you talk to pastors, I think a couple of things seem to pop up in my experience talking to a lot of young church planters, pastors that are in their first 5 years, is that, they have this sense of their calling and what it is that they're supposed to be spending their time doing, ministering to people, preaching the word. They also simultaneously, there is a paranoia there, I think, in terms of what their perception is of what the people's perception or the culture or the community's perception is of them. And it's probably different than, pastors from the generation that came before us, which was, it seemed to be there was a bit of a reverence there, hence the term reverend, and, some sense of respect for the office. And obviously that's changing, I think, with the way that people see pastors and what their work is, and maybe kind of even missing out on this sense of what is it that pastors are supposed to provide a culture and a community and a society. Maybe that has gotten lost in sort of the wider, kind of scheme of things. But yeah, those are just some thoughts. I think it's a real thing though, for sure.
Yeah. When you look at the landscape, and I'm going to broad brush, I think, but it seemed like for a long time, in sort of the professionalizing of pastoral ministry, where particularly in the United States, evangelical pastors are expected to be kind of entrepreneurial CEO type keep the people hyped, keep the you know, thing moving, growing, getting big, or just put on a good, you know, program on Sundays. And so you had the guys that really leaned into that and are really good at that, and kind of they build up these, you know, platforms. And what happens is, so often, not with every guy, but so often, those guys tend to become just kind of the face of a thing that may not be providing much pastoral care or discipleship and that sort of thing. And then on the other hand, you've got the guys who, for some reason, for whatever reason, they either don't want to do that, or they just can't do that. They want to and they can't. They don't have the gifts or the, you know, the skills or the dynamism or whatever it is. And they're being pressed even, you know, with these undue burdens because people want that and they're trying to actually shepherd. And so you have this kind of bifurcated, I think, two classes of pastor, but both of which don't really have clarity on what it is they're supposed to be doing because the cultural pressures and the expectations of what church should be over the last 20, 30 years has really changed. You know, I think about this just in the terms of, so my regular co-host on the program, Ross Ferguson, he has a deep heart for pastoral visitation. And I think he's even trying to do some writing in that area and some research in that area. And it's certainly an aspect of pastoral ministry that we talk about in my, you know, in my ministry course and with our residents and things. But in his mind, like, this is a lost art. People don't really do this anymore. And, you know, part of it is perhaps because pastors, you know, don't take that as a, you know, part of their service. But I also wonder, like, culturally, who wants the pastor to come knocking on their door, right? I mean, nobody wants that, right? Maybe visitation is kind of, you know, at least the way it used to be done, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and perhaps 80s is not, you know, it's kind of D-class A now or something. And so even just that, you know, the nature of the thing has changed so much, shaped by, you know, the culture, that I think for the guy who's just like, man, if it could just be me and my Bible, it'd be so much better, or it'd be so much, maybe not easier, but just more clear, more clarifying. What do you think that the average church member doesn't understand about the inner life of the pastor or the work of the pastor? You know, there's the joke about, you know, you just work one day a week or whatever it is. I think, you know, thinking charitably, I think most of our church folks know pastors work more than one day a week. But I still think there's some things that they just can't, or maybe aren't readily apparent to them. What are some of the things, or maybe what's the one big thing that you think church members often don't understand or don't know about their pastor?
I mean, I think it's such a good question. I mean, given everything that you just said, I think it's a foundational question for sure. You know, I think one of the things that pastors feel from their congregations, and I don't think congregations necessarily mean to do this, but there can be like a dehumanization of pastors. And so not really understanding, you know, the inner life of a pastor, not understanding even sort of the public life of a pastor, because there's a sense of vagueness to what a pastor does, even for pastors.
Yeah,
I think,
right. Exactly. Right? We just talked about that. Yeah. Yeah. What are they supposed to be doing?
Even a pastor is not even, you know, we get into routines after we've been doing it for long enough. And so that becomes a regular thing, but especially certainly for, I think, newer pastors, younger pastors, there's a sense of what is it that I'm supposed to be spending my time on? Like, what are the most important and valuable things I should be spending my time on? And the reality is that most of those things just aren't seen by people. And so I think when you have that sense of gray and you have that sense of ambiguity in terms of the office of a pastor, it also allows congregations, whether they know it or not, to almost dehumanize a pastor. So because the perception is that a pastor is supposed to be there and sort of the snap of a finger, the drop of a hat, a church member, you know, has to schedule an appointment with a pastor, or, you know, doesn't have a pastor just at their beck and call, or also comes to a pastor with, you know, a sense of criticism because of maybe something they said, you know, during a sermon on a Sunday, or not realizing that a pastor, you know, needs days off and they need to take vacations, and that, you know, this work that we're doing is like, it's such a mental strain that we need to approach it differently than maybe somebody else in a different kind of vocation approaches their work. And I just think there's such a misunderstanding of what a pastor does, both from the pastor and the church member, that I think this dehumanization can sort of like surface. And then it kind of forces a pastor, as they're kind of experiencing that, it moves a pastor into this place of maybe doubt and insecurity. Like, am I doing the job? Am I not meeting the needs of my congregation? Am I a little too self-focused? Am I not outward bound enough? And so it creates dissonance, I think, and disorientation. And I'm not saying I have the answer of how the problem's supposed to be fixed, because if we could go back so many years, it would probably be a lot of the same conversations, but just played out a little bit differently. Because, of course, back in the days when there wasn't social media and there wasn't, you know, these different things that now confuse the process a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, it'd probably be a lot of the same stories, I wonder.
Yeah. You know what I was just thinking about the other day? This is just a side note that I'm really appreciative of, is there's very few of our folks at Liberty Baptist Church that are active on social media. And I'm thinking, like, what a blessing that I don't have to, like, you know, sort of grit my teeth every time I open up Twitter or something. You know, we've got a few folks on there, but, you know, they hardly ever post anything. And when they do, it's not, you know, it's fine. And we have more folks on Facebook, but even that, you know, they're not really, it's such a blessing, actually, to not have, like, you know, guys you got to go corral and, you know, remind reprimand, or people that you're kind of like, ugh, I guess we got to talk to them about this thing, you know, or they're getting skirmish.
It's because social media has become such like a, it's become this reality for us and how we interact and how we perceive people. And yeah, I mean, you know, one comment that's not explicit enough or clear enough, like, can just send you down a spiral with a church member or with whoever,
right?
You know, because again, you can't say everything, and, you know, you've experienced this. I've experienced this. You've experienced this a lot more than I've experienced this. You being,
we're trying to say, cause I'm not careful with my words or what,
some of us in this room have a no argument policy on social media. Some of us don't, you know, I'm not trying to say anything.
I'm just trying to contend for the faith, brother. You know, one of the things I think a lot of church members don't understand, not all of them, but some, is the weight of kind of the spiritual accountability and the responsibility that good pastors carry isn't something that you turn off at the end of a day.
Yeah.
You know, no one really thinks about the church the way the pastors do. I know that's kind of a broad statement. You know, zealous church members, you know, there's church members that really care, but it's rare for a non-pastor to be kept up at night because of what's going on in the church and how the church is going. We lose sleep over what's going on in our lives, but when it comes to church members, things going on in other people's lives, we don't tend to lose sleep, but pastors do. And I think, like, you know, in my ministry past, that was something that I think very few people understood. I thought, if you could get inside my brain and my heart and know how anxious I am because of what's happening in the church, because of the state of the church, because of counseling situations, because of marriages that are on the brink, because of people who are engaged in patterns of sin that they either are not willing to get out of or just don't seem to have the power to get out of. Those are the kinds of things, like, I don't leave in the office when I leave for the day.
Yeah.
I take it home with me, and it's not a switch I can flip on and off. And I think of, you know, Paul, you know, going through that list of persecutions and afflictions and hardships and hungers and, you know, assassination attempts. And then at the end he says, and on top of all this, there's my anxiety that I feel for all the churches. And I think, oh man, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be shipwrecked, you know, Lord willing, I know it, you know, I never know what it's like to feel shipwrecked or to go hungry or to be in prison, but I certainly felt that, the anxiety that he feels for all the churches. And I think that's the kind of thing that good pastors carry around with them that I think the average church member doesn't quite get. I think those who can kind of get close to it, well, not just close to it, but those who can identify with that and perhaps even in a more pronounced way are like those who work in law enforcement or, you know, in places where they're up close with trauma a lot, maybe certain counselors or, you know, those in other helping professions.
Yeah.
Where it's not something you just can get out of your brain. You know, I'm just been clicking around in spreadsheets or, you know, whatever it is, which is good and invaluable work, but it's usually not the kind of thing that you go home, you know, oh man, did I put those digits
take
in?
Take it with you. You know?
Yeah. So the kind of thing that just sort of gets at your heart more than just your mind. Yeah, that's a weight, I think, that's inside. And good pastors aren't wearing their feelings on their shirt sleeves. They're not getting up and throwing a pity party in the pulpit. They're not constantly whining or talking about this stuff, but they just carry around this rock, you know, on their back.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought about the what you just said about Paul, that night and day tears, anxiety. And like every pastor that's ever read that verse goes, oh man, I mean, sure, I've never been shipwrecked. You know, my biggest thing is, you know, I just all the delayed and canceled flights. You know, that's our version of shipwrecking.
That's right, first now. World problems, you right know? There.
Right. First world problems. 100%.
Man, I walked into Baskin Robbins last night. I was in the airport flying home. It was 7:54, and I mean, I didn't even know what time it was, but the place is open. I walk in, I'm trying to order a shake. You know me, I like my milkshakes. Okay. And I was like, "What? How big is the large?" Because I didn't want something too big, you know? And I was like, "How big is the large?" And she goes, "We're closing in 7 minutes." And I thought, but are you closed now?
Now.
Right? Because it looks like you're open. And if you're not closing for 7 minutes, that means that you're open, or does it mean that you're closed? And the translation we're closing in 7 minutes communicated we're closed now. I'm now, not working yeah. now. You know.
Brother, so I would anyway, like to pray for you.
That you could put that in the list, right? I've been.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to stone me. They've whipped me. They put me in jail, and they told me Baskin Robbins was closed when it was still.
They withheld
actually
your
open.
Milkshake. They withheld your shake. But yeah, I know. And it's like comparisons are super unhelpful, right? So we're in this particular, you know, moment that God has put us in but we still feel that we still experience those tears and we still experience that anxiety. And, you know, I'm even thinking about those moments where, I mean, this is often, you know, where, you know, my wife wakes up in the morning and the first thing she says to me is she says, bad night. And I'll be like, 3 a.m. And she goes, oh, what? And then she'll name the thing from the day before that was a discussion, you know, resulting from, you know, somebody from the congregation or just a conflict. And I'll just nod my head, you know, and it's 6:30 in the morning. I've been up for 3 hours. That's not a pity party. That's just a reality. That's an expectation of the job. And, you know, the thing is that I also think that the Lord uniquely works in the hearts and lives of pastors in those moments. So all to say, those moments that I've experienced, the Lord has done like a maturing and just a unique work in my life. So the lack of sleep is not really the big point of that. The anxiety isn't really the biggest piece in that, but I think it's having those solitary hours in the early morning, the early pre-dawn morning, where like the Lord is using that time to do a work in me. And he provides a balm for my soul. He calms my fears. And those are special moments. They can be painful, but it's rare that I get through one of those nights and I don't feel more encouraged for having spent that solitude with the Lord. So two things happen, right, in the life of the pastors. We carry this weight. But then we also get to experience the lightening of that weight very uniquely from the Lord because he understands the role that we're in. And so there's this contrasting pain and beauty that happens that I don't think we want to miss. And I think Paul talks about that as well. I think he, whether he's implicit or explicit about it, he talks about just that comfort that he receives from the Lord and from other church members too, because other church members and even other leaders, they can really understand if you're willing to be vulnerable, if you're willing to have those, cultivate those kind of relationships, if you have them, people can have a really deep understanding of what it is that you face and they can minister to you as well. But That's a real thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the point isn't necessarily like it shouldn't be this way or we should try to get rid of this experience, you know, and there's certainly aspects of it that we can try to, you know, if there's fear of man issues, one of the reasons that you're, you know, experiencing this kind of, you know, anxiety is because, you know, there's a courage problem, you know, that we need to have or face or something like that. And there's, you know, sinful kind of worry and things like that. But in general, we want pastors to not be the kind of guy who turns off his concern at 5 p.m. You know, we want pastors who feel the weight of spiritual accountability, who feel the weight of having to give an account, like the author of Hebrews says, right? So the point isn't like, oh, how can we alleviate this or get rid of this experience? The only way to get rid of this experience is probably to hire a bunch of sociopaths as pastors. And some churches do that, right? I mean, some churches will do that unknowingly and sometimes even, you know, knowingly. So the point isn't like to throw a pity party about it and try to, you know, somehow disconnect pastors from this, you know, righteous anxiety. It's just to be aware of it and to understand it and to know that, you know, just because he's not communicating this, if you have a good and faithful pastor, to understand that he's feeling that, he is carrying that weight. And so it means that we should, think about encouragement. It means that we should think twice before we kind of nitpick or, you know, if there's valid concerns or, you know, certainly if our pastor's in sin or some kind of disqualification, you know, we don't sit on that. But maybe the suggestion we have that's a critique about something that's just a preference or a disappointment, maybe we sit on that because there's stuff going on in the inner life of that guy that we just maybe don't see and don't know about. Maybe he doesn't need one more, you know, pebble on top of the rock that he's carrying. I don't know.
I think that's it. It goes back to what I said, I think, earlier, which is treat your pastors like human beings. Treat them like people who are people. I mean, consider them a person before a pastor. And I think that's key, you know, and I think that will allow you to go, hey, he has this unique call, but he is just a human being and he needs the same amount of food, rest, sleep. He has the same amount of concerns that I do about life, about his kids, about his marriage.
He's trying to pay his bills.
He's trying to pay his bills. All those things. It's like all that stuff is still existing in his life. And to just understand that a pastor can have a bad day. A pastor can have a bad week. A pastor can have a bad year. He can be in a bad season. It doesn't mean that he's going to be there forever. It doesn't mean he's disqualified. It just means that there's stuff going on in his life that the Lord is working through. And to have that kind of patience and compassion on him that you're hoping to receive from him, it creates a mutuality there that will allow him to be able to get through some of these difficult seasons in a way that he can maybe come out the other end in a healthy place and in a flourishing place, I think.
Yeah. Can you share a time that a church member did something or said something that spoke to your heart in this way that kind of showed, even if they didn't quite understand or feel what you felt, they knew that there was, you know, an encouragement that was needed, or they knew that you're carrying something that most people don't see, and maybe they didn't really see it, but they just knew, they felt there was something going on and they just really blessed you in some way. What did they do and what was the situation?
It's funny you say that, because the first thing that pops into my mind, it's a couple that doesn't even attend the church anymore, still friends. But I remember, I don't remember the exact circumstance. I do remember it was a Sunday. It's a dear brother, somebody who I mentored for years and years. And it was a particularly difficult day. And I remember it was Sunday night and there was a lot of discouragement in the living room, you know, between my wife and I. And I felt that we heard a knock on the door and there was this brother standing there and he was holding this big bag of ice cream. and he just looked at me and he said, hey. And I said, hey. I said, what do you got going there? He goes, I got a big bag of ice cream. I said, well, that's not the worst thing I've ever heard out of another human being's mouth before. And he goes, hey, and this all he did. He just handed it to me. He said, hey. He goes, I was thinking about you today. I was praying for you. And I got the sense that you just needed some light and some ice cream. in your life. And he goes, and I just want you to know that I appreciate you. I love you. And for where I'm standing, hey, you're doing a good job. So I hope this helps. I hope this helps bring some joy to your night, wherever you might be at. I mean, that is a work of the spirit right there. And you know what? It didn't fix everything, but I got some ice cream and I heard some words.
That's good.
I heard some words from a brother who I knew had my back and I knew didn't want to see me fall into discouragement. And you know what? It changed the rest of the night. And it was, you know, we were beside ourselves with some measure of joy that we didn't have before that moment. And those are small things, but in the life of a pastor, those are actually big things.
That's good. I had a guy once, this was in response to, I had preached a message that was about kind of asking people, I think I use it as an illustration, asking people how they are, like, how are you? And actually meaning it, because that's just kind of the chit-chat way we just say hi, you know? How you doing? I'm fine. I'm, you know, doing good, whatever. And you just kind of move on.
Yeah.
And I kind of use it in illustration to say, like, do we ask how are you and actually mean it and want to know, you know, how someone's doing? And so we incorporated that into our men's discipleship group meetings at my last church, where we just took time at the end and it just opened up to the table. And I just said, how are you? And so each person could say, you know, actually, this is a really great season. But there were, you know, a fair number of guys that are, you know, that were struggling with different things, and they just needed someone to actually mean it. How are you? And not just mean it in like, hey, I'm just saying hi. And so I had just given this illustration and I hadn't really even thought, I wasn't even thinking reflexively, but very few people were asking me how I was, at least in that sense. I mean, certainly people would say, you know, how you doing, pastor? That kind of thing. Right. And this guy stopped me in the hallway. His name was Mike. And I was actually walking to my, this is like right after church. I'm like walking to my, you know, office, and he like grabbed me and looked at me in my face, and he goes, how are you? And like he meant it. And I was like, you know, no one's asked me that in a while, at least not the way that you're asking it. And I just felt like I couldn't unload everything on him. And, you know, I didn't say everything to him, but I was really struggling at that time with some stuff going on in the church and different things. And I couldn't tell him everything, but I just was like, thank you for asking. I mean, just that question and the way you asked it, I feel cared for. I feel like someone cares how I'm doing. And I hadn't really been feeling that. Yeah, I hadn't been feeling that. So just the question, the way he asked it was super
helpful. It's such a small thing.
Yeah.
It's a small thing that's it becomes an enormous thing for a pastor.
You know, around here lately, what I love about Liberty Baptist, the way that they ask, so sometimes people just say, good sermon, enjoy the sermon, that sort of thing. And that's fine. But I get messages weekly from folks saying how the sermon impacted a conversation they're having with someone or someone that they're discipling. It became sort of the premise for their conversation that day. And that's so helpful to know, like, because, you know, I mean, you get up every week and you're, you know, kind of, you know, putting out whatever labor you put in that week and you're trying to do your best. And you hope at a bare minimum that it's listenable, that nobody's bored. And sometimes I wonder, like, when I'm hitting minute 35, 37, 38, I'm like, I think maybe I'm pushing the limits of listenability here.
You are. We are. I am.
Yeah. And 100%. And then afterwards, someone comes up and shakes your hand and says, you know, enjoy the sermon. And that's nice. But when you start getting the texts and the emails, hey, I had a conversation with my teenage daughter this week because of this thing that you brought up in the sermon, or this thing that, you know, illustration, you know, this, you know, we had a dear lady who came up to me this last Sunday and there was an illustration that I had given, and it was a direct experience she had with a family member. And she had tears in her eyes and she just felt so encouraged, you know, and in a way affirmed because of this scenario. And like, those are encouragements that you know, where you don't feel like your labor's in vain, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not performing. This is actually helping you.
Right. Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. And that's, we never feel like we get enough of those types of encouragements. And certainly we can't stake our lives on those encouragements either, you know, because they typically, the story of most pastors is those kinds of encouragements are, you know, in some seasons, at least few and far between. And it again, it makes us question what we're doing. You know, am I hitting minute 39 too often in my sermons? Do I need to tighten things up? What am I missing here? Why do I never hear from anybody? And, you know, and some of that is hard to explain other than those are the moments where we just go, hey, I'm doing my best to be faithful. I'm not doing this for the affirmation of others. But you know what? A little encouragement, a little affirmation. And I mean this literally, a little affirmation and encouragement to a pastor, it goes miles. It goes a long way, you know? And so for people to understand that, you know, I think I don't know how to communicate that. I don't have the answers for how our congregations are supposed to understand that a little bit more. Maybe we need to do a little bit better of a job saying, hey, you know, I am a human being. I need encouragement, just like the way that I encourage you. Maybe there's a way to communicate that in some creative ways, but it does go such a long way for us, for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of the challenge of encouragement, we should mention that we have a new podcast, you and I, that's coming out or has come out from the Midwestern Seminaries podcast platform called The Heart of Pastoring. And I wanted to have this conversation with you on the For the Church podcast because I thought it would be a good episode to have, but also so that we could kind of push our listeners to add that podcast, The Heart of Pastoring, particularly if you're a pastor, but not just if you're a pastor. We have the first season, which is available, dropping weekly now. We're working through the biblical qualifications. In this first season, we're working through the biblical qualifications for eldership step by step. And the aim is right to kind of get to the heart. that's the title, to get to the heart of pastoring, not just the skills and those sorts of things, although we talk about preaching and those sorts of things, but to get to the inner life of the pastor. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to it. Felt like, you know, we recorded the first season. It went really well. I think it's going to be something that I think pastors are going to be able to, you know, again, it's not just all about like getting something practical, but it's getting something spiritual. It's getting something that's going to really reach into, you know, kind of the emotional inner health, inner life, like you said, of a pastor, so that they don't have to feel like they're losing their heart. They're losing their grasp on what it is that they're doing. And that's important for us. And we have experience and we know what it feels like to be in those places because we are in those places. And so, yeah, hoping that a lot of people out there will really, really gain some benefit from it.
Yeah. So ministry leaders, check out the Heart of Pastoring podcast available from Midwestern Seminary. You can find it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And for this podcast as well. Give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Share us with your friends. We would love that as well. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.